Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us as we go into the second hour of the show here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. I'm from the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Kevin driving a Kia this week. Speaking of Hummel's Wharf and Sunbury Motors Kia, that's on routes 11 and 15. And just go down the street just a bit. You'll be at the Susquehanna Valley Country Club, and that's where we'll be tomorrow. 24 hours from now, we'll be broadcasting from the patio at the beautiful Susquehanna Valley Country Club. This is after we have laid waste to the course. We'll be out there tomorrow at the beautiful layout at the Susquehanna Valley Country Club. All to benefit the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA. Tremendous charity to be involved with. Bonnie Wasmer and her team have done a great job over the years. The Truman H. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament has been a critical fundraiser for them. It's sold out again this year. Sold out again. In fact, I received an email 2 weeks ago saying, "Steve, no, don't promote the tournament anymore. We're out of spots." I mean, that's how quickly it went this year. That's how quickly it went. That tells everyone about the dedication here in the Valley. Means a lot. Means a lot. Valley's a very tight-knit community. It's one of the reasons, this is the fourth year now we've done this show. It's the fourth straight year we've been at this golf tournament. And Kevin and I love working this show and working through this area because of the passion in this area. And it's a passion for high school sports. It's a passion for youth sports. It's a passion for Penn State and Bucknell sports. It's a passion for, pro sports, whether it's the Eagles or the Steelers. Some Ravens in there, a few Giants, a few Jets, obviously baseball. There's some passion for the Pirates. We know there's passion for the Mets. Yankees have some passion out there. A lot of people love the Phillies. They just don't love this Phillies team, among others. But it's just great. And then when it gets to a tournament like this that benefits so many people and to see the support, tremendous. And it's the Truman H. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament. It benefits the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA. It'll be tomorrow. We're looking forward to doing the show live. Come on out. Drive on out. Say hi to us. Sit down. Chit-chat with us. I mean, I don't care if it's on the air or off the air. We'd love to just talk to each and every one of you and have a good time. And that's what we're going to do. About to sit down and have a little chit-chat, a little small talk with Mark Pavlik, old friend Mark Pavlik. Pav and I go back 31 years, I think. So 17th straight year he's taken his team to this stage. Used to be a Final Four, but now they've expanded it out to six. So tonight they have what they call, you don't really know what to call them, but I believe even they call them play-in games. But what's happening is they're all in Palo Alto. They're going to play at Maples Pavilion tonight at Stanford. And Penn State's the number five seed after winning the EIVA championship. And they'll take on the number four seed, Hawaii. They played Hawaii back on January 10th at the Outrigger Classic in Honolulu. But that was 4 months ago. Both teams are really different in 4 months, and they'll play them tonight, and the winner will get the number one overall seed, Lewis, on Thursday night. And we bring in the head coach of the Nittany Lions, joining us from the coast, Mark Pavlik. Pav, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks, Steve. Always good to be with you guys.
All right, let's start with your team. Aaron Russell, first team American Volleyball Coaches Association All-American. No surprise to anybody. Just a run. What's you, from day one to now? Every individual develops, and I've always appreciated people that never took their talent for granted. Does Aaron Russell fall into that category?
Oh, very much so. I think he's just constantly worked at trying to be the best student athlete he can be. And you know, I know that sounds like a cliche, but if you know the Russell family, I mean, that basically sums up what they believe is important. And Aaron has never stopped trying to get better, whether it's with his skill set, whether it's trying to be very diligent about what he does nutritionally and how much rest he gets and what he does in the weight room and how he performs in the classroom. I think he tries to set his mind to that and really embraces any help and advice he can get. So he's one of those athletes that knows he's very good, but he knows that he can always be better. He's always seeking the advice and the counsel from others that have been there before him.
At Maples, he'll be the late one, 11 o'clock Eastern time coming up on Tuesday night. You worked out at Santa Clara, and you had a chance run-in with Santa Clara grad Steve Nash.
Yeah, we did. It was interesting. We try to get into the area, and after especially cross-country travel, just knock off that travel rush that those 6'8", 6'9", guys get sitting in, you know, with eating their knees across the country. And so we got to Santa Clara, and thankfully their head coach of the women's program, John Wallace, I had contacted him. Yeah, bring him over, no problem. So at the end of practice, the guys were milling around, and several of our guys were taking pictures of a banner that hangs in their gym that shows Steve Nash as a Bronco. And then immediately underneath that image is an image of him holding a trophy as a Phoenix Sun. Mm-hmm. And Wallace says, who's taking a picture? I said, well, that's Spencer. He says, hey, Spencer, would you like to get a picture of the real Steve Nash? He's playing soccer right outside right now. Spencer looked at him and says, well, that would be a better picture. And so in math, it's the fastest I've ever seen our team get out of a practice gym. And they're waiting outside the soccer field in the parking lot by our bus, and Steve Nash and Randy Chastain come out. And they both were just very gracious with our guys and took pictures and selfies. And Aiden Albrecht had told John Wallace before he knew that Steve Nash was out there that Aiden even has a Santa Clara Steve Nash jersey.
Mm-hmm.
So we made Aiden's night. He took a selfie with Steve Nash. And I'm pretty sure he probably slept with his phone with the picture on all night. So.
Well, that's okay, because I actually broadcast a game where Steve Nash played against Penn State. So, and
it was
not a good night for Steve or Santa Clara. he had 10 points in the game against Penn State. And Penn State won the game with relative ease. Dan Earl played a really strong game that night. The next night, and this was over at the Shark Tank in San Jose, so it wasn't at Santa Clara's gym. The next night, then Penn State won the championship, but the consolation was Georgia Tech in Santa Clara and Steve Nash head-to-head with Stephon Marbury. The two of them were outstanding, and Santa Clara beat Georgia Tech, so outstanding. All right, so now you have to judge where your team is. Where are they right now mentally?
Oh, this group has always been so solid mentally. I said last night to Colin, yeah, this group is wound way too tight as I see them running around the gym
yeah.
You know, playing. One of the best things I think that happens with regard to that with us, Steve, is historically we've been blessed to be in this position an awful lot of times. And I think one of the things that happens with that is the upperclassmen pass down to the freshmen, the first-timers that are in here. Hey, here's what it's all about. You don't change anything. You don't do anything differently. You're better. You just keep being who you are. And this team has done that really well all year. I look at at last week's performances against Princeton and George Mason, and arguably in matches with those two teams where they were close during the regular season, we just blew them out of the water. And I like what we're bringing to the court right now. I like what we're bringing to the practice gym right now. It's one of those situations where as a head coach, I just want to make sure I don't get in their way. Mm-hmm. It, feels that comfortable right now.
Give me that. That's an interesting point because, you know, everyone, you know, coaching always gets such a focal point, as you well know, whether it, you know, a lot of credit when you win, way too much criticism when you don't. What kind of discipline does it take for you to say, you know what, if I stand back a bit, we're going to be fine?
You know, that's a great question. I think it all goes with the process that you invest in. When you tell the team from day one, you control what you can control. You work hard at the things that we ask you to do. And when they buy into it, the last thing I want to do as a head coach in the biggest matches of the year, insert myself and say, okay, you did everything we asked you to do. Now, to win, you've really got to do this. That's the wrong time to be saying that. So I think, at least in my opinion, the message has got to be consistent and my actions have to be consistent throughout the year. If I'm not going to insert myself in a five-game match against Harvard and just tell them, you're fine, you can do this, and keep my faith in our systems and how we've approached it, then they're going to keep their faith in the system, and more importantly, their faith in their strength. Because yeah. I think at crunch time, it's won by strength and not necessarily lost by weakness.
Analytics have become a very important part of sports. You love, you're a huge baseball fan, and you love baseball stats. You're a huge football fan. You love football stats. Analytics go a little bit deeper than that. Do you take a look in your sport at analytics? And if so, which ones are important to you?
We do, and we're not nearly as evolved yet as baseball or football. And we're probably closer to what you can do with baseball because every contact can be rated with us. And then you can sort out those contacts and really get down to some analytics. But, you know, provide some interesting fodder for thinking, but I don't think you make total decisions based on it. But I think some of the things that we look at is our side-out percentage, some very bare-bones things. If we side out at 80% at an 80% clip, so they serve us 10 times, we score 8,
okay,
we're winning that game. If we side out at less than a 60% clip, we lose that game. And it seems to be pretty black and white in those areas. The gray area is between 65% and 70% to 75% against good teams. You're in a tough match then. You look at that. You look at probably service error percentage. If we can keep the percentage of our serves service errors between 10 and 15%, you know, you figure in a game, 10% gives them 2.5 points. So if you can stay between giving them 2 to 4 points a game and shortening that game for them to 21 points, making them earn points, that's a huge analytic that we look at. From there, the next point that we get to is our transition attacking. And then when you want to get separation, you got to do it when you're serving and serve for points. Where if we dig a ball and we transition and that first swing kill, if we can be somewhere around 35 to 45% with that, we're operating at a pretty high efficiency for transition. So those are just three that we've looked at this year that has really been connected to us winning.
You faced Hawaii at the Outrigger, but that was back on January 10th. There's no doubt that 4 months later, the two teams are not the same. What does the video in combination with the analytics tell you about where Hawaii is right now?
You know, I think they have the best middle in the country right now in Taylor Averill. And they try to get him the ball an awful lot in the middle. What we've seen is whether it's playing tougher matches, whether it's them trying to work with being on the road, because let's face it, Hawaii's road schedule versus anybody else in the MPSF, it's not like they can go across the street and play somebody.
Sure.
I think, knowing what we've been through with travel, I think travel can take take its toll on a team like Hawaii. And I think there's a little bit of, they've been using the same lineup all the past two and a half months. And I think there might be a little bit of weariness in there. We look at that. We look at how they're handling the serving, the physical serving at them.
Right.
And I think they've shown flashes where they've been very solid with their ball handling. But they've also shown instances where they can bleed some points at times. And if we can get a 2 or 3 point run once or twice a game on them, I think that's going to go a long way. And that'll be another stretch, another correlation to us winning is if we can bleed them a little bit and stop our bleeding before it begins.
Right. I've always looked a lot at men's and women's volleyball, a lot like men's and women's tennis, on grass in particular. And in women's tennis, even on grass, you'll find there'll be some rallies. But in men's tennis, serve, volley, and get done. Well, men's volleyball a lot of times can be, hit it, get it done. How are you on get it done versus rallies?
Yeah, I think right now we're sitting at about 56 to 58% kills in our first swing off of their serve for the year. I think against ranked teams, believe it or not, that has gone up to about 59 to 60%. We're a little bit higher in against ranked teams. And that's where the men's game is played at. You don't want to give the opposition a chance to get a swing because everybody has big boys. Everybody has strong boys. And if you can put the ball away off that first swing consistently, but conversely, if you can knock them off the net and make their first swing more predictable, give your defense a little bit more time because the distance that the ball is going to travel is longer, we've done what we want to do with our serving.
Well, we've gone from Steve Nash to Brandi Chastain to men's, women's tennis analogies. I think we've covered it all. Pat, thanks so much. I appreciate the time. Good luck.
All right, Steve. Thank you.
Mark Pavlik, the outstanding men's volleyball coach at Penn State. You know, Russ Rose, of course, has had the truly amazing run with the 7 national championships, all the Big Ten titles, and he has done it in an absolute first-class, passionate way. Joe Paterno once was asked, wasn't asked about this. He freely volunteered this. He said, Russ Rose might be the best coach on this campus. And Russ Rose has done so much. In fact, I had a long talk with Russ 2 weeks ago. I think we're going to go out on the golf course here in a couple weeks or so when he's got a little bit of free time and I've got a little bit of free time. But it's just good for Russ. As Russ was saying to me, he says, you and I will just go out. We'll play some golf. It'll be great. He says, that way, we can just talk about whatever and I don't have to answer any questions and we'll just have fun. I said, yeah, that'd be great. And Mark Pavlik has done very much the same thing on the men's side. And he's been able to win a national title. He's been to 17 straight of these now. And they will take on Hawaii tomorrow night in Palo Alto at Maples Pavilion. Now, obviously, the men's volleyball field is thinner by a considerable margin compared to, obviously, the women's volleyball field. And that's, and you're going to find this along the way. For example, the men's gymnastics field, very, very thin as opposed to the women's gymnastics field. That's why you worry about, the future of some sports, but Pav's gone along and done a great job. The EIVA has expanded over time. They've been able to add in Harvard and Princeton and a couple of other teams, Sacred Heart. and expand that field there. And nationally, they compete so well. And as we pointed out, they went to that West Coast swing where they won three straight in the West Coast, including USC. That's where really it felt like the team came together. They got a real shot against Hawaii tonight, and then they'll take on number one Lewis. They played Lewis three times this year. Three times. They've all been very, very close. Next half hour, Ben Jones, statecollege.com. We're going to shift gears and go to basketball and talk football as we continue here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other options auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, final half hour of the show. Great to have you with us. It's been an indie-free show so far. It won't be for long, though. The 500 is one of the truly great, great events. That is uniquely American. And that's, IndyCar racing, NASCAR, they are uniquely American sports. Formula One's the international race. And you look at the Indianapolis 500, 104 years now, 104 years of the Indianapolis 500, starting with Ray Haroon on the bricks back in 1911. Kevin gets mad every time I bring up IndyCar history because he's mad that I know it. All right, so we've got that. Next week, by the way, Dick Girardi back on the show. He's going to join us from the Preakness Stakes. Talked to DJ yesterday. And the great run by American Pharoah. And that horse is just getting stretched out. And a mile and 3/16 coming up a week from Saturday at Pimlico, just outside of Baltimore. Coming up in this half hour, Ben Jones, statecollege.com. Our thanks to Missy Doherty, the Penn State women's lacrosse coach, who joined us to talk about the NCAA women's lacrosse championships coming up. She did that in the 3:30 half hour. In the previous half hour, Mark Pavlik, the head volleyball coach of the Nittany Lions, the men's volleyball championships taking place at Maples Pavilion in Palo Alto at Stanford. Starting tonight, they take on Hawaii. Our thanks to Pav for being on the show, who joined us from the coast to talk about his team and also about their chance meeting with Steve Nash and Brandi Chastain at practice yesterday as well. Coming up in this half hour, again, I mentioned Ben Jones of statecollege.com. Don't forget, we are going to be at the Greater Susquehanna Valley, at the Susquehanna Valley Country Club for the Truman H. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament to benefit the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA. We'll be there tomorrow. Kevin and I, Drew Kelly, will be in the morning flight tomorrow. Looking forward to that. And then the show will be out there on the patio at the Susquehanna Valley Country Club from 3 to 5 tomorrow. Come on out. Join us. I don't care if you have a question for us on the air or not. If you just want to come by, see the show, talk with us, have a little chit-chat during the commercial breaks, whatever, come on out and join us. We'll just have some fun, sports fans to sports fans, and we'll answer maybe some questions for you, off to the side. Bob Shoup and I, by the way, the Penn State defensive coordinator, will be the two of us will be in Scranton tonight. I know the caravan gets underway tonight. Bob and I referred to this as the web.com tour. But there's still going to be a great crowd there tonight, and Bob Shoup and I will be there. Then I'm in Johnstown on Saturday night. So we have a lot going on between now and the end of the week. Always with something going on is Ben Jones on this fine day from statecollege.com. Ben, welcome back. It's great to have you with us.
Steve, thanks for having me. The only thing I needed on a day like today was to hear your voice to go along with the sun. So it's it's quite good to be back on.
Fabulous. It's obviously a depressing life you lead. So comings and goings with Penn State basketball. Arriving, a recruit, of which I can't talk about, but you can, and departing is Brian Daly.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like every offseason has got one of those sort of coming and going storylines. The past few years have always had a little bit of something going on, but like you said, Brian Daly headed out of town, going back to Philadelphia to spend time with his family. The fact that they've been down there this entire time while he's been up here coaching really is the kind of thing that you go, you know, this makes sense. You have to be a part of bringing, you know, raising your kids and seeing them go through high school and what have you. And I think, you know, it got to the point where he had to make that decision. And he's headed back to Philadelphia. So it's really one of those things you can't really blame him for. On the other side, the coming in, as you said, you can't talk about him, but I can. Nazir Bostic, a great gift for Pat Chambers, especially in the big picture of this recruiting class. The 2016 class is really big to sort of keep that momentum in the offseason and keep that momentum on the recruiting trail going. And he's a guy who's close with Tony Carr and Lamar Stevens, who are probably the two even bigger targets that Penn State's after right now, a guard and a forward out of Philadelphia that play together, that have gotten a lot of high major interest and are the kind of guys that they've said, you know, we wouldn't mind being a package deal where we go to the same place together. So to get Bostic, who's a guy who's, you know, teammates with these guys, who's done the AAU circuit with these guys, to bring him on board and say, hey, you guys want to come here too. You know, that's a big help for the big picture. But in terms of what he is as a player, a real physical guy, a slasher, somebody who can get to the hoop, get to the rim. And that's really the sort of thing that Penn State's needed over the years and the sort of player that, you know, Pat Chambers is sort of looked for, you know, each year that he goes out on the recruiting trail.
All right. When you look at, you know, where they are, last recruiting class, now the start of this one, they're two pivotal classes for him. Is there a positional balance that you like so far?
Well, I mean, I think that Pat has always sort of made the priority to a certain extent has been getting good guards, because I think you have to have those guys that can run your offense, that are good ball handlers, that can score on their own. And then to try and find some of these big, like Mike Watkins, who's a real big guy, who's got some athletic ability and can kind of grow into his body. To have a guy like him come in gives you that balance with a big athletic guy and sort of, you know, the Josh Reeves and the Shep Gardeners, these other guys that sort of get you points other ways. I know that people always say, you know, Penn State has to go out and get this sort of prototypical, you know, big man. They need to go and find their Shaq. But there's really two things that go on here. There's not very many of those players out there, and the ones who are out there probably aren't going to Penn State, to be perfectly honest. And there's a lot more flexibility that you have in an offense if you can find a big man, a guy who's 6'8 or something like that, that can catch the ball, that can spread the floor a little bit. I think that's what made Frank Kaminsky so good, was the ability for him to have offense from all sorts of different areas on the court. And obviously Frank Kaminsky's are few and far between, but those sorts of players that are maybe a little more athletic than the traditional big, I think that's a guy that they're hoping Mike Watkins can be. But obviously he's sort of a work in progress on the offensive end. But as long as you've got guys like Jordan Dickerson and Watkins and Donovan Jackie can block shots, at least they're bringing something to the table.
Yeah, at the same time, Frank Kaminsky came into Wisconsin. That's not the Frank Kaminsky we see today. You have to get lucky sometimes with a big guy like that they develop the way he did.
Yeah, and I think that's what Penn State's hoping happens to Mike Watkins. He's obviously very talented on the defensive end, but it's sort of the popular word to use for him is raw, or maybe a project on the offensive end. And if you can take a guy you think has those things that you can't coach, has the size and has maybe some of the athleticism that, you know, you can't really put into a player, he just has, if you can sort of hone his skills and sharpen his tools, you can turn a guy that maybe gets overlooked by some schools, or maybe, you know, doesn't get that shot that he would have gotten if he had looked a little better in high school, and you turn him into those kinds of players. And that's not to say Mike Watkins is going to be Frank Kaminsky, but certainly, you know, the hope is, especially for a program that's trying to build itself and trying to move forward, you have to be able to put some stock into finding guys you feel like you can develop those guys, maybe even the sort of Taylor Battle types that maybe battled some injuries, things here or there that you feel like if you put the time and energy into them, they can really be productive for you down the road.
Every 2 years, you can make a rules change in college basketball. Well, that two-year period is just about up, and it's upon us within 2 weeks. There aren't any quick fixes, but most people expect a 30-second shot clock and a bigger arc under the basket to be two of the items that will go before and probably be approved by the committee. A, do you think that will help in some way? And B, is there something you would recommend?
That's a good question. I mean, I've always thought the block charge call has always been a problematic spot for really basketball in general, but more so college basketball, because it doesn't happen quite as much in the NBA. But I think that has always been a tough area. So if they feel like making that restricted area kind of opens up that part of the floor a little bit, then maybe that's what you've got to do. I like the shot clock idea. I think it sort of gets some pace back into the game. But at the same time, Wisconsin's been one of those teams where people say, you know, they'll hold the ball down to the last 5 seconds of the shot clock. They're very efficient with it, and they'll still score. So maybe it's not always exciting, but, it's not like Wisconsin was a hard team to watch this past year, and they've sort of been the poster child at times for the team that will sort of let the clock wind down. I don't know what I would do to fix it in general, the game. I think that any time that, guys don't make shots, the game is going to look bad. And I think some of the biggest issues that we've had the past few years, and maybe this last year in general, is guys are just not making shots all the time. And I think, you can change all the rules you want, but basketball really just comes down to you got to make shots, you got to try not to foul, and you've got to play defense. So I don't know if I'd fix too much, but certainly a shot clock is going to give everybody more possessions if you reduce it, and more possessions is more offense, and nobody really turns down more offense.
Yeah, and I think there aren't any quick things to it. I mean, I have 30-second shot clocks, a step in the right direction. I know some people talk 24, but I think you still need to have a separator in college basketball. And that's one. The arc underneath, fine. And I agree with you. The block charge thing is 90% of the time is just called incorrectly. I mean, you and I both know 90% of the time it's a block. I'm just getting to a spot. And I know the rule specifically states you don't have to be planted and waiting. But common sense comes into play here. 90% of the time, it's a block.
Yeah, I mean, and that, like you said, that's always been one of those things where you go, that's got to be a block or it's got to be a charge. The one thing I would fix, actually, is I've never been a huge fan of how an offensive player can kind of go just sort of out of control down the lane and get those calls. And I don't know how you fix that problem, and they don't pay me to try and figure out how to fix that problem. But if there would be some way to go, an offensive player who's clearly not in control can somehow manage to go in there and draw that blocking call. I get that that's a difficult line to draw where a guy's in control and out of control, but I've never liked those sort of bailout calls, even if they're sort of, technically following the letter of the law.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things I would look at. Make sure no hand checking up front at all, zero. I think part of the issue of shooting the basketball, Ben, is that you have to have the freedom to shoot it. Number two, I think they have to determine how much contact you allow down below. One arm in the back, two. I mean, in other words, if you only allow one, maybe. They've got to be careful about that. But also, how often do you go to an instant replay? How often would you go?
I would go. I think it's difficult because every time that they set the instant replay rules, there's an instance where you wish that the replay had been in effect there. I think it's important to get the calls right. So you always have that situation where you don't want a judgment call to kind of affect the outcome of the game. But then again, the sort of human error aspect, especially in games like baseball where you just sort of let that strike zone be what it is been sort of what makes sports humanized. But you talked about contact down low. I was watching Tim Duncan play this last series against the Clippers, and you watch how much he's got his hand down there. And I've watched so much college basketball this year that I'm thinking, he's fouling out in the first half practically. So, I think it's important to prepare these guys for the next level. And sometimes that means, letting a little bit of contact down low.
Right. Well, that'll be coming up in a couple of weeks, and we'll see what they do with it. The NBA's been ahead of them on this. It's hard to say the NBA's ahead in terms of style of play, but, by making the time to cross the timeline 8 seconds instead of 10 by putting in the defensive 3 seconds. Now, the difference is, you know, flopping, they can foul. They can fine you. You can't do that in the college game. I'm sorry, but we were going to fine you. For what? Football-wise, Caravan gets rolling this week. Let's talk about the draft. How did you view how Penn State came out in the draft?
I think it was more or less what everybody expected. Donovan Smith was the first guy to go. That was sort of what everybody thought was going to happen. I think it's interesting that Donovan Smith goes from a guy that the draft board says, you know, maybe you should come back for another year, to a guy where everyone thought that maybe due to the fact that the draft is not that all that deep that he could maybe sneak into the first round. He goes, you know, second pick in the second round. So that's essentially the first round. Jesse James gets picked up. That was sort of something that you expected. And Adrian Amos, who is a guy who I've seen, you know, I saw him projected anywhere from the second round to the sixth round. He gets picked up by the Bears, but I think the three, probably the most sure guys, got picked up in the draft. I think people will say, well, Mike Hall should have, and I think Mike Hall, without a doubt, is going to be a very good football player at the next level, but I think there are enough question marks in terms of his size and maybe his speed that maybe there's another guy on the board that doesn't have those question marks that somebody picked up in the draft. But to be very clear, I don't think there's any doubt that Mike Hall, everything we've seen him do at Penn State time and time again, gives you all the indications that you need that he's going to be a good player at the next level.
Yeah, everything conspired against Mike Hall in this process. He played hurt down the stretch. He then had a scope right after the bowl game. Now the mistake I think he made, it was going to the Senior Bowl. Okay, I think that, you know, that ended up being a mistake. But then when he had his individual workout here, he got hurt. So I think it just conspired against him to knock him down the board. But I think you and I have both seen enough of him as a football player. What about Jesse James with the Steelers?
I think that's interesting for him because he doesn't have to be the guy right away. I think The fact that they've got Heath Miller there, and they're sort of similar players in a lot of ways, that sort of rumbling, sort of big physical guy. I think he can learn behind him when the Steelers are ready to put James into the mix. You'll know that he'll have gone through practice with a guy who's been a veteran in the league for a really long time, knows how to catch the ball, knows how to run with it afterwards. And like we've seen Jesse James do, it seems like Jesse James has two things that he does. He either catches the ball for a 5-yard gain or he goes 40 yards and scores a touchdown. So I think, you know, he definitely shows that kind of versatility, and I think Pittsburgh is the kind of place where he can kind of learn how to use his size and his strength to his advantage. I think there's things that he has to work on, and I think the fact that he can work on those without the pressures of having to perform, you know, really from day one, is going to be a big asset for him.
All right, now the next one, Adrian Amos with the Bears.
Yeah, and Amos, I mean, he's been a guy that's sort of been around the field throughout his career, but I think he's obviously got the physicality and the sort of mental parts of the game that you need. The Bears have always been a good defensive team, and I think, you know, if you can go out there and learn from some of the guys, kind of like Jesse James, learn from those guys that are in the secondary how to really make the most of your skill set, then there's really no downside for him there.
And then have you heard anything about Sam Ficken?
I have not heard from him specifically, but some other people who have talked to that camp are under the impression that he's got a couple options. I don't think there's any doubt that Sam's going to end up somewhere. But in a lot of ways, and I talked to him at his pro day, you know, kicker is almost like quarterback in a sense that, you know, once you find a guy, once you get your David Akers or Robbie Gould that can go out there and make kicks for you 95% of the time, you're really hard-pressed to go and try and find another kicker. So he's sort of in a tough spot in that regard. But Sam, you know, has been too good, and there's too many teams in the NFL who probably need to find a guy to either back up or be the kickoff, or rather the field goal specialist, so you know that he's going to have a chance somewhere. I think if he can show that his kickoffs are maybe a little deeper and a little more consistent, he's going to do a lot of help for himself. But I know he said at his pro day that he worked on that sort of technique a little bit. But it's a little bit like a golf swing where you don't want to tweak it too much during the season. But once you have some time to sort of sit down and figure out what you can do to add on 5 extra yards onto your kickoffs, I don't think there's any doubt that he'll end up signed sooner rather than later.
Okay, Ben, thanks. Appreciate that. And our word is now that Sam has signed his contract with the Kansas City Chiefs, a free agent deal that will put him in Andy Reid's camp. So Sam Ficken becomes the latest Nittany Lion to sign. The only one I don't really know about is C.J. Alanian. Just not sure about what his status is. Everybody else, pretty good handle on. Zach Zwinak is going to get a look by the Houston Texans. Ross Travis is going to get a look by the Houston Texans. Deion Barnes and Bill Belton will both get a look with the New York Jets. Mike Hull with the Miami Dolphins. Miles Diefenbach with the Pittsburgh Steelers. So they'll all get into camps, and now Sam Ficken with the Kansas City Chiefs. Wrapping it up for today, as I mentioned, Bob Shoup, Penn State's outstanding defensive coordinator. Bob and I will be in Scranton tonight. Looking forward to that. We'll be actually up in Dixon City. It's the greater Scranton Penn State club that we're speaking to tonight. And I go to Johnstown for Saturday night to speak down there in Jack Ham's hometown. More importantly for me, there are certain events that I circle every year that are a must, as far as I'm concerned, where I enjoy it more than anything else away from what I do in announcing Penn State football, Penn State basketball, State College Spikes. Everyone knows how much I love announcing games. But there are certain events that every year I make sure I'm a part of. And this event tomorrow at the Susquehanna Valley Country Club, I've had more fun at this than maybe any event I've been involved in. That's why every year it's always, okay, what's the date? And I actually work my schedule completely around this date. So I'm looking forward to seeing all of you out there tomorrow morning. Kevin and I will be out there playing golf in the morning and doing the show in the afternoon from the Susquehanna Valley Country Club. Looking forward to that very much. Can't wait to talk to you tomorrow in person on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay.